You're listening to the top stories of 2016 on WFHB.
We bring you the most significant stories of the year
as they were reported by your friends and neighbors.
The face of Bloomington continues to transform
while local residents fight to save parts of the city they love.
Local people joined protests near and far
as Hoosiers help elect Republicans across state and federal governments.
From local to state to national news,
WFHB brought you the stories affecting our community.
Here are the top stories of 2016 on WFHB.
Welcome to the top stories of 2016. For WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford. Today is number two on our countdown, Demands for Racial Justice. We're taking a look back at how local residents took part in activism surrounding race and police violence. The Black Lives Matter movement first gained national attention more than 3 years ago, and Monroe County residents have organized various demonstrations and other actions related to the movement during that time. But 2016 saw Bloomington's biggest rally yet. The event came largely in response to a series of violent incidents in early July. 37-year-old Alton Sterling was killed by Baton Rouge police on July 5th. The next day, a police officer in Minnesota shot and killed Philando Castile while he was in his car with his girlfriend and daughter. On the 7th, during a Black Lives Matter rally in Dallas, a gunman fired on police, killing 5 officers and injuring 7 more. The Black Lives Matter Network later called that shooting a tragedy, and in a statement they said, quote, "To assign the actions of one person to an entire movement is dangerous and irresponsible," unquote. During the first 13 days after Alton Sterling was killed, there were at least 89 Black Lives Matter protests in cities around the country, including the one in Bloomington. The Daily Local News reported this story on July 18th. It's read by Doug Storm and Maria McKinley.
WFHB reporters were at the Courthouse Square in downtown Bloomington this weekend, covering what turned out to be one of the largest political rallies the city has seen in recent years. The Black Lives Matter rally was organized following the recent police killings of Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and Philando Castile in Minneapolis.
The event began with a march that started at the IU sample gates, then moved west on Kirkwood Avenue before reaching the Courthouse Square, where the crowd filled much of the south end of the lawn. WFHB reporters were on hand to speak with participants, and we bring you some of that audio now.
My name is Jaquita Joy Roberts. I'm from Gary, Indiana, born and raised, but I've lived in Bloomington for a while now. I'm in Bloomington because I came to IU and then I stayed. I had a family. I have a son and a daughter. I'm at the march and the rally because I'm African American. I'm black. And a lot of the things that are happening around the world are really troubling, especially if it can happen to me and my children. I have to teach them differently. I have to teach them that they can't do all of their friends can do. And it's hard. It's tough. And the alarming rate of things happening isn't really new, but the technology makes it, you know, that much worse that we can see it so up close and personal, even though it was up close and personal then, you know. But, you know, right now it almost gives you a sense of hopelessness. And then things like this, when we all come together, you know, it kind of re-energizes you in a way to keep fighting.
My name is Guy Loftman.
The issues that have come up around the country, do you think that they're present in Bloomington as well?
Absolutely. I've been on the NAACP Executive Committee going on 20 years. We have basically all the problems just writ a little smaller. I was the sort of co-director of a study of race and criminal justice that was done almost 15 years ago, that showed basically blacks and whites charged with the same crime, blacks go to jail in Monroe County twice as long as whites. I did a follow-up study just 2 years ago a very, very simple study, but it showed that of all the blacks who go to the Monroe County Jail, they stay on average twice as long as whites.
Those were attendees at Bloomington's Black Lives Matter rally speaking on Saturday afternoon, just before the rally officially started.
Other speakers on Saturday offered a variety of views about police and police violence. Indiana University history professor Amrita Myers repeated the statement, quote, "You cannot get good fruit from a poison tree," unquote. Myers is also a host of Bring It On, WFHB's African American public affairs show.
We talk about bad police officers and good police officers. We also talk about institutional or structural racism. What we fail to understand is that you cannot focus on individual police officers and say, they just were bad, or we need to shift the training, or they slipped through accidentally. The roots of this tree that have built America are built on the roots of white supremacy. That poisoned tree that has grown from those roots, that has been nourished with the blood of four centuries of black and brown people, that tree has created institutionalized structures of policing, judicial systems, politics, banking, all the way down the line to our educational structures and systems.
That was Indiana University history professor Amrita Myers speaking on Saturday afternoon at the Black Lives Matter rally on the Courthouse Square in Bloomington.
After Myers and several speakers, including Mayor John Hamilton, addressed the crowd, there was a break while a group of musicians prepared to perform. During that break, WFHB spoke with two local residents, Marvin Jones and Andrea Sterling, who both said they moved to Bloomington after growing up outside of Indiana. Jones spoke first about his time in Bloomington.
My experience here has been just okay. I find it problematic that there's really no space here as a person of color for me. I mean, we have a street of international restaurants, but no black food. We have spaces for white LGBT people, but we don't have spaces for black LGBT people. So Bloomington is liberal, but it's not liberal for everybody.
I think that there is the common understanding or thought that Bloomington is like a safe space or a liberal space, but that's an example of the way in which we like live in two separate worlds, because I knew before I even moved here that I was going to experience racism from a friend who had been here years ago, and she told me of her experiences here, and then I came here and connected with other black people who all had their own stories of not just implicit racism but explicit racism, wherein they were being called vile names. And then that experience happened to myself and my friend also. Just one night we're walking and we had people yelling at us outside of windows, calling us monkeys. And that same night, another friend was called the N-word, also walking again at night by themselves.
That was Andrea Sterling and Marvin Jones speaking at the Black Lives Matter rally on Saturday. The rally continued into the early evening with speakers and music.
You're listening to the top stories of 2016 on WFHB. We're taking a look back at how local residents took part in activism surrounding race and police violence. That last story aired July 18th on the Daily Local News. Stories involving the issues highlighted by Black Lives Matter were particularly present in the national news throughout the summer. During that same time period, the city of Bloomington made a move that struck some residents as moving away from police accountability. On August 16th, the Daily Local News aired this story, which is introduced by Sarah Vaughn.
The city of Bloomington has officially adopted new rules that dramatically increase the cost of accessing footage from police body cameras and dash cams. The standard fee for accessing a single video is now $150, the maximum allowed by state law. Until this summer, the fee was $20. The increase comes amid rising tensions around the country between police departments and the public, with instances of documented police violence regularly setting off major protests. Bloomington City Attorney Patty Mulville Hill worked with city officials to propose the increase. She spoke with WFHB News Director Joe Crawford about the new fee, and we bring you their conversation now for today's WFHB Community Report.
Can you talk about what the decision-making process was like to first propose the $150 fee?
So what happened is the General Assembly enacted House Enrolled Act 1019 during their last session. And what they did, a couple things. And what got all the press was that police agencies that use body cameras were going to have to keep those footage for 190 days. What kind of got missed in the whole thing is when the actual House Enrolled Act was passed, they put in a bunch of other requirements about how we keep not just body camera footage, but how we keep dash cam footage, how we keep surveillance footage, and what we do with radio traffic. What the new law says is that we are required to redact certain portions of those videos so that the average public can't see them. Examples would include victims of sexual assault, minors. So if we go to domestic violence and there's any evidence of sexual assault, we would have to redact that victim's face. If there's minors in the home, we then have to redact them as well. To make things even more complicated, the state police agency that oversees what I'm going to call, like, where we get our criminal history information from, it's called IDACS. Under the rules for the state police, we have to keep information we get from IDACS completely confidential. We're not allowed to release it. Our officers on their radios are going to be getting confidential IDACS information on most of their runs because they're running plates, they're getting background information on alleged suspects. So what happens is we've got all of this footage that we now have to take. So if you take that domestic violence call, and let's say it even takes just takes an hour to resolve, I have 2 1-hour dash cam videos I've got to go through, 2 1-hour body cam footage that I got to go through, and 2 sets of radio traffic. And then I have to redact all of that information that I'm not allowed to show anymore. And then I got to double check to make sure I redacted it properly. So $150 is the maximum we can charge, but it's not going to cover the cost of one city employee spending all day going through 6 hours of video and radio traffic and then redacting the same.
Well, let me make sure, though, I understand that, because I thought it was $150 per camera per incident.
Yeah, so it'll be $150 per camera for that. But even just doing one camera can take long.
But in the instance that you described, if you had 6 different cameras,
yeah,
that would be $900.
I can't do math in my head. If you tell me 125 times that, that's correct.
It'd be 150 times 6, right? So that'd be $900.
Yeah.
So the justification is that because you have an employee who, you know, is making some amount of money and they're sitting in front of a computer editing this for a certain amount of time, it was come up with $150 would be an appropriate amount.
Correct. And then also the added expense that we have to do in buying all of the new software and server packages.
Is there any provision that would make it possible to get a waiver if the person requesting the footage was, let's say, low income or had some justification for not being able to pay the fee?
No, there's no provision for any of the waivers in that section of the code.
Was there any discussion about just recent events across the country and the sensitivity, basically the importance of police body camera footage in trying to understand some of these incidents, especially involving men who have been black and frankly who've also been low income? Was there any discussion about how that would be perceived in the community?
Not with me directly, no. It could have happened at a different level, but not that I was engaged in.
Lastly, and I think this is the way that it might look to some folks, but, you know, do you think that this increase was supported at all in an attempt to limit the number of requests for police body camera footage or discourage people, especially people without much money, from, you know, trying to see the footage of arrests?
No, I at no point in any of the conversations that I had with any member of the police department, the legal department, the administration, or all 9 members of the city council and their staff was that ever even raised.
So there wasn't even a conversation about, boy, this might sort of look like that's what is happening?
I mean, I think at the city council meeting there was people who were saying this is really, we recognize that this is a high expense, but we think that there's a legitimate reason for doing it. I don't think anybody went in with this with the intent of hoping to discourage people from requesting this type of record. That was never an intent that was expressed to me personally, that they were trying to dissuade people from getting these records.
All right, Patty, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Hey, no problem.
You're listening to the top stories of 2016 on WFHB. Today is number 2 on our countdown, Demands for Racial Justice. We're looking back at how Bloomington took part in activism surrounding race and police violence. That last story about a dramatic increase in the fee to access police body camera footage in Bloomington aired on August 16th. A little less than 2 months later, a coalition of Indiana University student groups organized another Black Lives Matter rally in Bloomington. Up next is a story that I reported on October 11th. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford. More than an hour before hundreds of people would march through downtown Bloomington and hold a more than 20-minute long demonstration in the street in front of the Bloomington police station, Liz Mitchell and several others stood in a parking lot fastening pieces of paper to black and white balloons. On each of the dozens of pieces of paper was a name.
We have names of people who have died at the hands of police, so we're doing black balloons as well as white balloons. Balloon release whenever, if anybody chooses to take a balloon with a name on it and go down to the square. It's just our way of saying Black Lives Matter. People want to say all lives matter. Well, if Black Lives Matter, we wouldn't be doing this. If you look at history, people of color, their lives don't matter. We're just trying to say, hey, look, we matter, even though we really don't.
As Mitchell's group finished inflating the balloons, a crowd gathered a few yards away at Indiana University's sample gates. IU sophomore Isaac Paintsell was one of many who stood talking in small groups prior to the demonstration.
I'm here just to, you know, rally the cause, bring awareness to the situation of the injustices going on, especially here at a predominantly white institution. Hopefully they can see us in our peaceful protest, and from this a solution can come forth.
The event last night was advertised as a Black Lives Matter rally organized by a group called Students Against State Violence. Shortly after 6:30 p.m., organizers began by reading the names of black Americans killed by police in recent months. 13-year-old Tyree King, who was shot multiple times by an officer in Columbus, Ohio. 40-year-old Terrence Crutcher, shot and killed by police in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Keith Lamont Scott, killed in Charlotte, North Carolina. Corinne Gaines, killed in Baltimore. Alfred Olongo, killed in El Cajon, California. An organizer with Students Against State Violence, or SASV, told the group the list was not, of course, complete.
SASV also wants to make it clear that we think it's very important to not only focus on male, cisgender, or innocent victims of police violence in this movement. It is also necessary for us to do research about the names of black women and trans people who have suffered at the hands of the police and other forms of state violence, and to defend those who the media and politicians portray as undeserving of sympathy or defense.
Several speakers took to the microphone to address the crowd. Yasmin Fashir is an IU student.
I go to class every single morning knowing that this institution was not made for me. Every single morning. And every single person at this rally needs to understand that every single institution in the United States of America is meant to bend the black body for the white people to stand on top of us.
Come on!
Every single institution. And we get that from the media. We're crooks. We're murderers. We're rapists. And we get that from school. We get that from education. From education, we learn that Africa is disease and starvation. And that's it. And that white people created everything, and they know everything. And when we understand what happens in America, we are enraged all the time.
That was IU student Yasmin Fashir speaking last night at a Black Lives Matter rally at IU's sample gates. The president of the Black Student Union, Kialia Hollingsworth, also spoke to the crowd. Hollingsworth says black students at IU often immerse themselves in the campus's black community. She mentioned spaces like the Neil Marshall Black Cultural Center and the Department of African American and African Diaspora Studies. But she says the university at large doesn't do well at dealing with issues like social justice and inclusion.
The university does not do enough to address or encourage these conversations on campus. Whenever IUPD is still racially profiling, professors and students are afraid to talk about race, and people of color are not treated with the same respect and care that we deserve,
the work of the institution and all of its students is not done. We are at a university for a short 4 to 5 year span, which is near to nothing when considering the 200 years of institutionalized inequality that the university has only gradually addressed. This is why Black students are almost immediately charged with the responsibility to implement change on this campus upon arrival, as we are constantly reminded that if we do not, who will?
After Hollingsworth and several other speakers, including representatives from a Black Lives Matter group from Indianapolis, organizers detailed plans to march. Nick Graven is with Students Against State Violence.
Hey, y'all, I just wanted to make sure everyone understands that this is an unpermitted march. We're going to be marching in the street, so just be aware of the risks involved with that. And please, white people whose bodies are not as vulnerable, be on the perimeter and be blocking whatever aggression might be targeted at the rally, please. Thank you.
Around 7:30 p.m., hundreds of people moved into the street, proceeding west up Kirkwood Avenue until they hit College Street and turned left. Several cars were delayed a few minutes as the crowd passed by, though there were no major disputes with drivers along the route. Some onlookers joined in the march, and others took cell phone camera footage. The marchers eventually moved east on 3rd Street until they reached the corner of Lincoln and 3rd. That's right in front of the Bloomington police station. Demonstrators formed lines around the entire intersection, effectively blocking traffic, including one city bus. Most vehicles opted to turn around after a few moments, although a few drivers did shout at the protesters. A few different times, drivers tried to maneuver around the crowd, only to find themselves blocked again by demonstrators. In one instance, the driver of an SUV did try to plow through the crowd, but he stopped after a few yards.
Terror, and if in the future he picks up a gun, he shall not be blamed.
Although other media reports suggested protesters somehow damaged the vehicle involved in that incident, I did not personally witness any damage, and no witnesses that I talked to did either. Most media reports have focused largely on that incident, which took place only in a few brief moments and was not even actually seen by many of the protesters. One of the stated reasons for stopping in front of the Bloomington police station was to draw attention to the case of Joseph Smedley, an IU student who disappeared last year and was later found dead in Griffey Lake. His death was ruled a suicide, but many local residents have joined members of Smedley's family in questioning the police investigation into that incident. Andrea Sterling addressed the crowd, saying that Bloomington police have not provided Vivian Smedley with information about her brother's death.
Details have changed. At one point, his book bag had rocks in it to weigh him down. Suddenly, his book bag had nothing in it. They haven't let out the detail that he had bruises on his back. She had to find that out herself. She had to do the extra work and pay for it to get that information. So when we talk about what we can do for Black people, one of the things that we can do, a real tangible thing, is putting pressure on the Bloomington Police Department to get that information to Vivian. She is the legal next of kin.
Hello.
But they are not giving her necessary documents for her to continue on this investigation. So we need to regularly and constantly, not just today, put pressure on the Bloomington PD to ensure that they are giving Vivian what she is legally obligated to get.
The group held the intersection at Lincoln and 3rd for more than 20 minutes before continuing the march down 3rd Street and then to the intersection of Indiana and Kirkwood Avenues, where speeches continued. One participant there identified herself as an IU student.
Hi, my name is Star Martinez. I'm a Chicana from El Paso, Texas. Special shout out to my sisters over here from Indiana University Meyer School of Law. We are law students for justice here. education. We know where we stand. We know where we stand as allies. It is important to us. Chicana sisters, black brothers, black trans, black... Everybody's in this together. So we got to remember that we are in this together. We cannot keep each other down.
The demonstrators disbanded shortly after 8:30 p.m. You're listening to the top stories of 2016 on WFHB. That story aired on the Daily Local News on October 11th. And that brings us to the end of number two on our countdown, Demands for Racial Justice. We've been looking back at how local residents took part in activism surrounding race and police violence. Tune in at 5:30 p.m. tomorrow to hear number one on our countdown. The Top Stories of 2016 is a production of the WFHB News Department. I produced today's episode. Jennifer Brooks and Liz Mitchell contributed to today's reports. For WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford.